Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab Podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl.
Hope everybody's doing well in these difficult times. If you're starting to feel a little stressed out, you're starting to feel a little alone, you're starting to feel a little isolated, join the crowd. So the good news is well, yeah, maybe there's good news from New York that they may have peaked and are maybe headed down the other side. There's certainly, if you listen to the governor's conference today, he was talking about they're starting to look at a plan to reopen their economy. Certainly not right now, but at least they're starting to think that way, which is a good thing for us. And then Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae both have tightened right now. When you're buying deals, they've made it a little bit tighter. We talked about a couple calls ago how they're asking for P&I for 12 months and additional 12 months. They've increased their... in order for any type of waivers, they're increasing their debt coverage ratio to 2+ and a loan to value of 50%. So we'll see these restrictions for the next few months until we get on the backside of the pandemic and we start to see some relief in sight. There was just something that came over on my Harvard feed that we share between classmates that they are testing 4 different drugs right now. Let me see if I can find it. Mass testing throughout the world. So the World Health Organization is testing, global mega trial of 4 of the most promising coronavirus treatments. Some of it, one of them had to do with the SARS. One of them had to do with the malaria. One of them had to do with AIDS. So these are drugs that are already out there working for other types of virus pandemics. And they're seeing what type of an effect they'll have on the coronavirus patients. So that's being done right now as this pandemic works its way through our world. Hopefully something good will come of it in a short period of time. So that's what's happening over here. In the meantime, business still goes on remotely. There are still deals being done. There are people sharpening their knives as they should be during this time. You know, pick up a skill that you're deficient at. Work on a skill that you could be better at. You can still build your team. If you've been to the Ultimate Partnering events, you can go through your old cards. You know, you can start reaching out to people that you had forgotten about because you haven't been through those cards in a while, and strengthen your team somehow. Again, you can be reaching out to brokers too on a regular basis. They're certainly, the smart ones are reaching out to us investors and they're giving information as well. So when the game starts getting played again, there will be actually shouldn't say game starts getting played because it's still being played. I mean, people are still closing on deals that they had in the pipeline and people are still putting deals together. Although, as we know, the buyers are wary, the lenders are wary, and the sellers want to get those deals sold as soon as possible because they're not quite sure what's going to happen on the back end in terms of the rent collections when they start doing the trailing numbers. So that's where we're at. So as we start this call, I thought I would bring on Scott Stafford. Scott, many of you know, he's been a student for many, many years now. He's been part of just about all of our groups, coaching, Elevate, L Society. And he created a product called REI Indicator that actually goes through the demographics of all the major cities, secondary markets, and tertiary cities throughout the U.S., and the amazing thing about, if you're not using it, those of you that are using it know it's amazing, but for those of you that aren't using it, the amazing thing about the software is you can literally, it goes neighborhood by neighborhood and classifies areas as A, B, C's, or D's. So, you know, Jeff takes him on his bus tours when he does immersion. And before the tour, he Skypes in now, but before the tour, he'll talk about the different areas, A, B, C's, and D's. And he'll tell you, if you go to this street, and you stand on this side of the street and you look over the other side of the street, you should see this because this is where the dividing line is. And that's what happens. It's pretty amazing. But anyways, I thought I'd bring Scott on because we were chatting the other day and he was talking about, you know, one of the opportunities that's going to be on the backside of this pandemic. So I wanted him to share that with everybody as well. And then talk about some of the markets that are where things are happening right now. So Scott, you with me?
I am here.
What's up, Scott?
We're just watching the very quiet street outside my window.
Yeah, I'll bet. Have you been outside lately?
I have. I'm very fortunate to live in a place where it's fairly easy to be distant from people and still get exercise. So I've been on my bike in places we're allowed to go, but it's not a normal world.
No, not at all.
We'll get through this. We will get through this.
Absolutely. I happened to be in the office doing this call because I had to come in and grab something. And then Jermaine was in here because he's on this call as well. And he came in to hand me some paper and asked me to start opening up my computer. And I was like, dude, get away from me. There's too many people in this office.
Right.
I don't want to make my kids orphans.
Yes, of course. I'm glad you're healthy. And I hope everybody is doing well and is healthy and all the best to them and their family. Some of you may recall that I am originally from the New York City metropolitan area. So I've been watching New York very closely because I have a lot of family there and it does look a little promising. Although we do have to see a ripple through the rest of the country from this. So we're not quite out of the woods.
I got friends in New York. None of them are leaving their places. They're using Instacart to get food in. But my cousin, you know, my cousin, Chris Bowser.
Oh yeah.
He got it.
Oh no.
He's on the backside of it now. Yeah.
Wow.
So he lives in New York. He got it. He's got two kids, a wife and a dog, and they basically quarantined him in the bedroom and he couldn't see his kids for 2 weeks and she had to do everything. So scary stuff. So let's talk about, you know, you had mentioned some interesting demographics that are happening that are going to be ripe for those that know about them. As soon as business starts picking up.
Actually, there's a couple of things that are overlapping here, which are very interesting. Some that are new because of the COVID-19 situation, as well as some of the things that are old. The thing I like to let people know is that as you've heard others sometimes speak from an economic perspective on the news, our economy was fundamentally actually quite strong. And this was a blow from the side as opposed to a blow from inside the financial markets or inside the cycle of up and down. It came out from a different angle, and therefore those fundamentals should still be in play, which means that markets that are strong will be strong again, and markets that came on late should also, you know, be a little like an irregular typical market up and down, maybe a little more vulnerable. So the markets really that we're looking at here are the markets that have strong fundamentals. You want to watch for the ones that have multiple economic stools, legs of the stool to stand on. But what's really interesting about this timing is that when we look at the big picture of the demographic groups, the boomers, the Xers, the millennials, we were poised numerically that in about 2021, which is what, right around the corner, right?
Yeah.
There was going to be a massive influx of wage earning, career advancing, career peaking folks hitting the marketplace in record numbers, bigger than the boomers. We had the biggest surge with the boomers. Xers is a smaller generation and it's about 10 million less than the boomers. So that's a little hard to absorb in the economy. There's just less activity, but look how well we've been doing even with that 10 million less cohort leading the front lines of the top wage earners, the peak career. So we're already, without changing anything, without anything to do with COVID-19, poised for another 12 to 15 million people entering massively into the economy. And that should poise us for the biggest upswing in U.S. history for economic growth. So the timing could actually be very interesting because we are having right now a national reset. A lot of us didn't think we'd see two in our lifetimes, but here we go. We had one in 2008. We've got another one here in 2020. And coinciding with the recovery from COVID-19, where fundamentals should allow us to do well, and with this huge new segment of the population coming on board, graduating college, getting into careers, making decisions about where they're going to live. We have a huge opportunity to support them with multifamily in that transition, because as we know, many people don't buy a house as soon as they leave high school or college. We've got debts to pay. They're still figuring out where they want to live. Apartments are ideal for them, and it gives them that flexibility and cost effectiveness that they need. So we have really, an excitement. I'm really kind of course, nervous and anxious about COVID-19 like everybody else. It isn't over yet, but I am really, really optimistic about the place we're going to go in the next 5 to 10 years. It really should be a healthy restart. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be a very great coincidence of boom. Couple of things that are also interesting to think about is that it also coincides with a massive shift in boomers to retirement, which has already started, but will really pick up steam over the next 5 to 10 years. And that's going to change demand for housing and demand for employment and the geography of where people are going to be moving to support that and to experience that. So that's important to think about. And we may also see a possibility of a doubling up, a tripling up, I'm hoping, as a nation, from the federal level all the way on into nonprofits and health institutions, et cetera, on health research. So those markets that have exposure already and may have an opportunity to really grow because of COVID-19 beyond the norms that are already in place.
So which markets out there are those markets? Like certainly Boston would be.
Boston's a huge one. New York, Pittsburgh, Minneapolis, and the smaller market to the south, which houses the Mayo Clinic, Los Angeles. And there are probably at least a dozen other markets with significant health research that goes on. And the one I left out, which people shouldn't leave out, is actually Washington, D.C. Montgomery County has a huge number of biotech and nanotech companies already. And so there's already a workforce there that can handle it. There's already an appetite for it. So that could be an interesting place to look at as well. And not just in Montgomery County, but the surrounding counties that would support it.
So what do you think about, so we've got a reset on the economy because of COVID-19. And but at the same time, we were certainly going towards the edge of this particular cycle. Yeah. So now, do you think the recovery from this pandemic is also going to create the recovery of the real estate market as a whole, in the sense that, do you know how when we typically come out of a recovery from a correction, it's the major markets that will start to roar out first. And that also includes Minneapolis for some strange reason. Minneapolis, which you probably know why, Scott, but I don't. But Minneapolis is always one of the first markets to move as well.
Yeah. So, yes, it is.
So do you think it's going to be a major market like surge when we come out of this, like a regular correction, or are those secondary markets that were doing so well because the money had moved towards the center of the country as the primary markets get overpriced, are those secondary markets are going to come roaring back as well? What's your opinion?
My opinion on that is that we should see maybe a little, definitely strengthen the primaries, because the big money, the institutional money, always wants to go where they can hedge their bet the best. And when you have economies with 4 and 5 major economic engines, it's just easier to justify the solidity and the comfort level of putting your money in at risk. They're willing to take lower returns in exchange for that level of comfort. And yet it does create that boom. And I really think that will happen in the primaries. But I think we have a shot here for the secondaries to do a little better on several fronts. First, they already hadn't quite finished their recovery, if you will, or their boom times. And second, I think that some people may be reevaluating their lifestyle. You know, where do they live? Do they want to live in places that are so incredibly dense that it's highly vulnerable to be out and about? Because we have an uncertainty hanging over our heads now that we didn't before about, you know, where should we be?
I hadn't even thought of that. You know, it's so ironic that the millennials, they all wanted to live in the cities, and then the baby boomers, they were retiring and they wanted to live in the cities too, because it's close to everything and everything's convenient. And then all of a sudden you got this, you know, this mysterious killer out there that could come back and you're safer when you're not in the cities.
And it's safer when you're not closely together in any location. I mean, we have a town in Georgia. Albany, Georgia has had a tremendous outbreak, and it was made even worse when they had a funeral for somebody who died of COVID, and a lot of people got sick at the funeral. And so it's anywhere where we're gathering closely, but it's easier to run a life away from people more, you know, in open air markets compared to the densities of the Bostons and the New Yorks and the Washington, D.C., et cetera. So I think that there will be maybe a little more attention as people make these decisions as millennials and that generation behind them that are now just about ready to come out of college in their very early years. They're not peak earners, but we need to keep our eyes on them because they're going to be renters. They're going to be a lot more suspicious. So it's a crystal ball. You could guess. Some things I'm really concerned about and watching, if you will. Concerned may sound like it's negative. It's just what I'm focused on. Is that we have a level of unemployment potentially occurring that will be unlike anything we've ever recorded. How fast can we reabsorb those jobs? How many businesses are going to be lost permanently? And on the flip side of that, what is the pent-up demand? Lots of people are not buying cars right now. They're not buying things. They're not moving apartments. They're not thinking about new furniture. So there's going to be this huge pent-up demand where people are going to be ready to go out and spend. So that'll kind of counterbalance the unemployment, hopefully. But it's these frontline workers that are generally what you might think of as more of a C kind of apartment tenant that have been hit the hardest financially and are at risk the most. So there definitely should be some focus on that. We don't know if there's going to be a relapse in the fall. Statistically speaking, we should probably have an uptick again as we go into the colder months. So I think any signs of recovery-ish or healthier economic behavior in the country that we might see in June, July, and August should be taken with a serious grain of salt. It's not necessarily going to tell us that we're in the clear and that we've got a robust recovery full speed ahead. We probably need to go through another winter, and we probably also need to have a vaccine in place to give that sense of reassurance. We also don't know where energy prices are going to go. So I would particularly avoid markets right now that are overexposed on energy, because we just don't know what's going to happen. There's been some positive motion in that direction the last couple of days to stabilize those prices, but we don't know where that's going to be. So I would definitely be thinking about avoiding those markets.
Yeah, that would be Houston, Lafayette. Where's Lafayette?
Yes, Midland, Odessa, certainly much of North Dakota. We don't know whether shale is going to continue to have a price support necessary. We don't know if there's still the same level of appetite for the renewables, the wind and solar. I mean, long-term fundamentally, yes, but with the competitive price being so low for the carbon-based, it's less likely to ramp up quite as quickly. So keep your eye on that.
That's interesting. What other markets do you think are going to be affected negatively in the future?
Negatively. I always have been more cautious on tertiary markets. They're usually the last on and the first off in terms of a cycle, an up cycle, because they just don't have as much to hold on to when things are tight.
Yeah, just let me explain that phrase to everybody. So you have primary markets, which are the major cities. You have secondary markets, which are the smaller cities. And then you have tertiary markets, which are much smaller cities. Typically, demographically, they have between 100,000 and maybe 500,000 people in them. So when Scott says tertiary markets, he's talking about the smaller cities, typically farther away from the larger cities.
And by the way, for some of you who are here who have an RE indicator system, you may not have already noticed yet that the release that we did about 10 days ago includes an ability to see what category each of the markets are in, primary, secondary, or tertiary.
Oh, pretty good. So the tertiary markets are always, here's the thing with tertiary markets, typically, we did really well in tertiary markets in Texas many years ago. And it was because Texas always overbills in their major cities. And the rents had never really raised high enough in order for the new building to begin in the tertiary markets. But actually, the rents didn't raise high enough to substantiate the new building of new product. But the occupancy was staying at 95%. So you could actually be raising rents at certain portions. So it lagged the primaries, and the apartments always stayed full, which was good. So typically the money will flow from the primaries to the secondaries to the tertiaries. And then when the correction happens, it goes back out to the primaries. So this is an opportunity right now, really, to be looking at DC, which is usually one of the first out of the gates as well. LA, yeah. San Diego, Boston, New York City as opportunities to cash flow again.
Yes. San Francisco as well, I'd put in that list.
Yeah. What other markets would you be focused on right now?
I still like the Southeast, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, especially sort of the mid-size markets there, because there really aren't very many primaries in the Southeast, just because of the nature of it growing through the air conditioning age as opposed to the industrial age. And I think the fundamentals are strong there. And I think that's supportive of, for example, people thinking, gee, maybe not Washington, D.C. How about something like Greenville, South Carolina, or Charleston, where it's not quite so dense and the quality of life is quite good and the cost of living is reasonable. So I really think the Southeast is very good. I think Texas will do well as we come out of this. That's where we've been for a very long time. The question is how much adjustment will there be in the cap rates in California and in Seattle? And, you know, maybe there could be some grabs there, because mid and long term, those markets are still fantastic. And it would be great if in this correction, you could acquire some assets in those much longer term strong markets. If there could be a brief moment, a window of 3 to 6 months, maybe, I'm just guessing here, where there could be just the right combination. And Dave, as you teach us, as you taught me from day one, the first time you ever instructed me was, no matter what the market is, there's always some distressed property and or distressed seller, and sometimes it's a combination of the two, where this will be the moment that even if the cap rates in that market haven't fully corrected, the property could perform because of the urgency of the seller.
Yes.
And there are going to be a fair number of people in the small to medium-sized properties, the 5 units, the 20 units, the 60 units, that they're going to be saying, I'm folding up shop, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, right. One other point is this is an opportunity. There will be an opportunity, a short window, like Scott had said, to get A properties at B yields. Because typically, you know, we're looking for anywhere from 8% above cash on cash return. And you'll start seeing A properties at the turn of the market start performing at that before they start sinking down again. So keep your eye out to get a nice A property with a nice yield. And that would be a legacy property, something that you keep for a long, long time that will cash flow always nicely for you. And it will be easy to asset manage and manage. So
they're more cycle proof. They tend to have a lot more stability during these times of fluctuation.
Yeah, it's the C properties in these times of fluctuations that get hurt the worst, because they're the service providers. Those are the workers that lose their jobs first.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, last number of years I've been preaching, you know, do micro repositionings by properties that are BB minus. If you want to cut your teeth with some C properties, make sure you're going to get in and out of there, you know, in a relatively quick period of time, because you don't want to get stuck with one. My old mentor, you know, he told me many, many years ago, I remember I brought him my next property. I was at my seventh property by the time I had met this gentleman. And he agreed to mentor me for a fee. And I was like, Mark, you're so rich. Why are you charging me to be mentored? And he said, and he was a hard money lender. That's how I met him. And he said, because, you know, many years ago, Dave, he was brilliant at taxes. And he said, give me your taxes and I'll show you where you can save more money and we'll send it back in. And it was something that he really liked to do. You know, people have these like really, I know a guy who loves to just look at flow charts. Him and his wife will sit down with a glass of wine and look at flow charts. That's what they do. This particular guy loved to look at taxes and find ways that he could save people money on taxes. So he actually put an ad in the paper that said, I will analyze your taxes for free and get you a check for at least 20% of what you sent in. And he got no responses. No response at all. Maybe one or two trickled in, but that was it. And he was really surprised. So then he put another ad in that said, for $99, I'll get you a check for, you know,
yep.
And he got all kinds of responses. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, I'm going to charge you X amount of dollars. He says, you know, I don't need the money, but it makes it more valuable to you, because if I charge you nothing, that's the value you'd put on it. So So I was like, no, Mark, I really value you.
Yes.
Charging you. And then he said he was going to donate it to some charity. So that was good.
Brilliant.
Anyway, he told me many years ago that when I brought in my first property, I said, Mark, look at my next deal. It's a 3-unit property. I said, look, take a look at it. And he looked at me and he says, why are you buying that property? I says, look, I'm getting it for a low unit price and it cash flows great. He says, yeah. He says, but that's a marginal property in a marginal area. I was like, yeah. So most of the properties in Brockton that I was buying, Brockton, Massachusetts, were marginal properties in marginal areas. What I thought they were the best deals. And he said, Dave, he says, you know, if anything happened to the economy, he said, those marginal properties are, number one, they're the most difficult properties to run. You get marginal tenants in marginal properties. You get marginal upside in marginal properties. And he said, if you ever need to sell a property quickly, especially in a down market, people aren't buying the marginal properties. He said, you buy properties in good B properties in B areas. He said, you'll get good tenants. There'll be less wear and tear on the properties. They'll pay their rent. You won't have to chase them as much. And most importantly, on the upswing in the, on the upswing in the market, you'll get a higher return than you'll get on your C property. And most importantly, you'll be able to sell that property if you need to in a down market.
Right.
And I'll forget that. So that's why you want to, you can cut your teeth on C's. A lot of people do because they look cheap, but just know, cut your teeth and then move on as fast as you can into the B's.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I want to thank Scott for coming on and giving some great information. And everybody out there, stay safe. We'll be back next week. We'll keep you advised as to what's going on in the marketplace. Remember, this is a time to be sharpening your tools. To be prepared for the opportunity that is just around the corner at this point. Work on those things that you're a little weak at. Work on strengthening your team. Work on your property. If you're an operator right now, daily focus on your property. You know that. I don't have to tell you. And don't touch any doorknobs in the next week. And we'll see you all next week. All right. Bye, everybody. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.